favorite preachers, Brother Ed Harrell. He spent most of his time being a professor. Was in an office with a fellow that thought he was a philosopher. And Ed said he would just ask dumb questions. And one day they were sitting there in their office and he looked over and he said, "Ed, do you know the difference between a dog and a man?" And Ed said, "Well, I thought seriously about saying, we only got two legs." But he finally said, "No, I guess I don't." And the fellow said, "Well, I've thought about it a lot. And the big difference is that a dog doesn't know he's going to die. So every day he just greets you at the door, jumping up and down, wagging his tail, because he doesn't know that he's going to die." I started laughing and I said, "I think there's some people that are that way. That is, they refuse to think about it. They refuse to acknowledge it. But you know, if you follow that line, there's also another element. And that is that the dog also has never contemplated what happens when he dies. Does he ever ask the inevitable question, if a man dies, will he rise again?" But men ask that question. And I think I understand a little bit about Job and all the suffering that Job was going through. And you know, sometimes the suffering gets so bad that death actually does look like an easy solution on that. Except, as somebody else pointed out one time, that death is a permanent solution to a temporary problem. And yet it's not a permanent solution. Because Job asked the question, will a man live yet again? The writer of Ecclesiastes tried to figure out the meaning of life. And he put aside all of the books and all of the revelation of God and the book of Moses and all of that and said, "I'm going to figure this out all by myself." And so he began thinking and trying and experimenting. And you know, the one thing that he kept coming up again was this concept, you're going to die. Famous chapter 3, there's a time to live and a time to die. And he goes on about that. And I'm going to tell you, I don't know how true some of those statements are, but I know it is a time to die. But as he thought about that, he said in chapter 2, he said, here's part of the problem. And that is that when you die, it doesn't matter whether you are wise or foolish, you're still going to die. And both the wise and those that are foolish are going to die. Of course, I want to raise my hand during a class like this and say, yes, but the wise can live so much better while they are alive. So the answer is don't be dumb and stay dumb. You will still die, but there's a better way of living than stupidity. The writer of Ecclesiastes said in chapter 3 and verse 19, he said, that's true of both man and beast. They both die. But men usually live a little longer than that. Looking out over the world, he said in chapter 8 and verse 8, and when that day of death comes, you are powerless. There is nothing you can do about it. It doesn't matter whether you are rich and famous or poor and weak, you cannot have any power over that day. It's going to happen. Can't avoid it. And he then comes back and he says that with all of that, life is vanity. That is, it's hard to figure out what is the real purpose of life. And then he makes a statement. And several of you have already asked me about it because of talking about Luke 16 and my comment this morning. When we die, do we know anything? And the writer of Ecclesiastes, without looking from God's perspective, looking at it only from man's perspective, he says, from where I'm sitting, it looks like when you die, the dead don't know anything. But that's not a true statement. In fact, the writer of Ecclesiastes makes quite a few statements in the early part of the book that are not really accurate of what it is in reality, and this is one of them. Because as we saw in Luke chapter 16, Lazarus and the rich man, they both knew Abraham, and Lazarus was there and he knew him by name, and the rich man knew that he had five brothers, and there's enough evidence that that will go on. So what I'm saying is this. One of the problems is that every one of us, we're not dogs. We know we're going to die. And one of the problems that you face with that is that then what? And everybody asks that question. That is probably one of the most often asked philosophical questions. Nobody asks, will I die? We know that. What will happen when I die? So I got reading what some of the atheists said. And that was pathetic. When you die, that's it. You turn back into stardust, rather known as dirt. And there is no knowledge, there is no life, there is no hope, there's nothing. And that somehow is supposed to be a comforting philosophy. One of the atheist writers at the early part of the 1900s, he railed against preachers and he said, what in the world can you say to a mother and dad as they're holding their child that is passing from life? Religion has no words of comfort whatsoever. And one of the preachers took him up on it. He said, okay, what would you say? Well, he can't say anything. He'd have to say, that's life. That's death. So long, been good to know you. That's the end. There's nothing else. So the atheist really has no answer on what there is after death because they don't believe there is anything. Most of the philosophers have some concept of a spirit being, but why, they don't know. It's more just wishful thinking. The problem with a lot of the philosophers is, back in the New Testament day, they approached life that all that was physical and material was evil. And so they pictured mankind as having this glorious spirit, an immortal spirit that is trapped in the physical, that is corrupt and evil. And so they pictured the idea that when you die, the spirit is free like a bird. But then, where does it go? We don't know. What does it do? We don't know. How does it exist? We don't know. What's it like? We don't know. How do you know that's what takes place? We don't know. And so, it's really a hope of what they have. Going to China, I've had to learn a little bit about Hinduism and Buddhism. And when you pick up the Eastern religions, they all believe in reincarnation. And that is the underpinning of so much of the problems that they have in their society. And the problem with reincarnation is, at least the version we have in America, is that everybody wants to come back as somebody famous. And everybody that believes in reincarnation that I've ever met or that I ever read or wrote a book, they in their previous lives were always somebody famous. And yet, they have no memory of that. The Eastern religions say you have to come back because you did bad things in this life and karma demands that you suffer for those bad things. And you died before you suffered for them, so you have to come back and you have to suffer in order to make this whole karma work. And if you do anything bad this time, you're going to come back again. Well, wait a minute. Do I get to retain any of the knowledge that I had? Can I bring back with me the experiences that I had so that I will know, don't do that again? And the answer is no. You start fresh every time. Well, do you even remember? You don't remember any of what it was. Well, how do you know that it takes place? We don't. And again, it's just kind of, in one sense, a hopeful thing. But in the Eastern religions, it's not hopeful. In the Eastern religions, what they're seeking for is release from this perpetual circle of coming back and dying and coming back and dying and coming back and dying. And they hope someday to get good enough to not have to come back, but they don't know what happens then. And Christians believe in something entirely different. That is, what we believe in is that, yes, a man will die. The body will be buried. But God has promised that there will be a resurrection. A resurrection of life, and a resurrection where the body will be fit for heaven and we can live with God forever and ever and never die again. Why do we believe that? Now, I'm starting from a presupposition, and I know that. I want you to know that I know that. I'm approaching the Bible as if it was, in fact, a revelation from God. If you're visiting with us tonight and you would like to discuss why I believe that, I will be glad to talk with you. But I'm starting from that premise. And what the Bible does is it records that this, in fact, has happened several times. In the Old Testament, the prophet Elijah raised up a widow's son. There was also kind of a strange one. After Elisha died, somebody fell into his grave. And falling into his grave caused the man to be resurrected again. When you turn to the New Testament, Jesus stopped a funeral procession and raised the widow of Nain's son and restored him to life. When you take a look, he went to the house of Jairus and his daughter was dead and he raised her back to life. And then in John chapter 11 with Lazarus, Lazarus was dead, and Jesus purposefully stayed away. It's kind of an interesting thing. In the first century Judaism, they believed that when a man died, the spirit hovered around the grave for 3 days. I don't know why they believed that, but that was what they believed. And on the fourth day, it was evident the body was dead and beginning to decay, and so the spirit would leave. So Jesus waited 4 days and came to the tomb. And when he came to the tomb, it was evident that Lazarus would have been dead. In fact, his sister said, "Don't open the tomb, he stinks," because the body would have decayed by that time. And it's rather interesting to me that Jesus simply says, "Lazarus, come forth," and here he comes. Still wrapped in all of the grave clothes, and I don't know whether he had to hop like a bunny or whether they wrapped each leg separately and he was able to walk. But you know, the fact that anybody at all came out of that tomb would have shocked everybody that was there. And he did. But not only that, Jesus himself died and was raised again on the third day. You know, one of the things that Paul said one time when he was talking to Agrippa in Acts chapter 26, he was talking about the resurrection of Jesus. And I don't know whether I picture it working this way. Agrippa looked at him and rolled his eyes. Now, I don't know whether Agrippa rolled his eyes or not, but it seems as if Agrippa did something to go, "Oh no, not this." And Paul made a statement and he says, "Why would you think it preposterous that God could raise a man from the dead?" If you're talking about raising from the dead without God, yes, that is hard to believe. But if you put God into the equation, Paul said is, so what's hard with this? If God can create the heavens and the earth and God created man in the beginning, it is a small thing indeed that He could then raise the man from the dead. But the Bible promises us that there will be a resurrection. In John chapter 5, verse 28 and 29, Jesus said, marvel not at this, there is a day coming when all that are in the tomb shall hear the voice of the Son of God and shall come forth. Those that have done good unto a resurrection of life, and those that have done evil unto a resurrection of damnation or condemnation. In Acts chapter 24, when Paul was arrested and he was talking to the Jewish leaders, he simply told them there that he stood because he affirmed there was a resurrection of the just and the unjust. So whether we're good or bad, we still face eternity. One other one is found over in 1 Thessalonians 4, and it really doesn't talk about the bad, it just talks about the Christians. And those Christians that are in Christ, they will rise first to be with the Lord. And then those that are lucky enough to be alive when Jesus comes will be caught up together with them, and they will be changed, and together we will be with the Lord. And Paul says at that juncture, comfort one another with these words. I thought about preaching this tonight, and I'm going, you know, I know it's going to stir up memories. It's going to cause many of you to think about friends and family. Well, that's okay. And I started going back through all of the old directories that I have, 30 years worth of directories. And it's just absolutely amazing to see how many of the people have in fact died. And if I stay here long enough, y'all going to bury me. Or I'm going to bury you. But one of us is going to go first. And what we need at that point is we need something that will give us hope and comfort and strength. And the greatest doctrine for hope and strength that I can think of in all the Bible is right there. It's not over. There is more to come. And those that are good, it is a resurrection of life. And God has in fact promised that to us. And that's what gives us hope. And so Paul started that section in 1 Thessalonians 4. He said, we do not sorrow like the world sorrows. We don't go to funerals like an atheist would go to a funeral. For when we conduct a funeral, I don't know whether you've been to one lately or not, but you know, Christians oftentimes spend about half of the time in funerals laughing. Because we begin talking about all the silly things this person did. And it was fun. And they were good people, and they were our friends, and we enjoyed life together. And we can laugh because there's more good days to come. There is the hope of the resurrection. The Apostle Paul in 1 Corinthians chapter 15. Somehow or another, the church at Corinth, one of their problems was they began teaching, there is no resurrection. Turn over to 1 Corinthians 15. We won't read this whole chapter, but we're going to read parts of this. The Apostle Paul asked rather incredulously, how in the world can you say that He is not raised from the dead? Verse 12. If Christ is proclaimed as raised from the dead, how can some of you say there is no resurrection of the dead? If there is no resurrection of the dead, then Christ was not raised. And if Christ was not raised, then our preaching is vain, your faith is vain. And we, the apostles, are found to be misrepresenting God. We testified about God that He raised Christ, whom He did not raise, if it is true that the dead are not raised. If the dead are not raised, then Christ has not been raised. And if Christ has not been raised, your faith is futile. You are still in your sin. And those who have fallen asleep in Christ, they perished. And if in Christ we have hope in this life only, we are of all people most to be pitied. If we put all of our hope in Jesus Christ and renounce the world, you know what? The Romans, that was one of their objections to Christianity. You are people that deny yourselves the world and the pleasures of the world and the good things of life. And for what? You then die like the rest of us, but your God's not even powerful enough to stop you from dying. Why worship a God that lets you die? When He tells you while you're living, you can't have fun either. And the answer the Christians gave routinely was what Paul was saying here. The body dies, but not the spirit. The body without the spirit is dead. And what we do is we bury the body. And so starting in verse 19, if Christ, we have hope in this life only, we are people most to be pitied. But in fact, Christ has been raised from the dead, the first fruits of those that have fallen asleep. If you were a farmer, you would understand first fruits, particularly if you had fig trees or date palms. Because what happens is, spring comes. Have you all noticed the leaves coming back? These poor mesquite trees we thought died from that freeze we had. And now all of a sudden, 2 days, they look dead, and then the next day, here's all these little green buds coming back on those. And you begin doing that. Now, if those were fruit trees, those buds would tell you, we're going to have figs. And some of the figs would ripen first, and that would be the first fruit. And what that means is there's more to come. And Jesus is the first fruit of the dead. And what that means is there's more to come. Our resurrection is in fact directly connected to the resurrection of Jesus Christ. And since He was raised from the dead, He will then raise us from the dead. Verse 21 and 22. As by man came death, by man came the resurrection of the dead, but each in its own order. For as in Adam all die, so in Christ all shall be made alive. Whether good or bad, they will hear the voice and they will come forth. And then it points out in verse 26 that Jesus is now King of Kings and will reign until the last enemy is put to death. And you know the last enemy? Paul identified it. Death. I've wrestled with this. I don't know whether you ever think about all this stuff or not. Maybe preachers are just weird. But sometimes it looks like death is not an enemy, but a friend. And yet, when Paul wrote this, what he said is, death is our enemy. I believe that's true because God did not intend for that to be the way it worked. God created us to live. And God created us to live with Him. But when sin entered the world, the soul that sins, it shall die. And death then becomes the enemy of us. And when we die, even if we are righteous, we are not what we are supposed to be, and we're not in a condition of what God intended for us to be, and we are then waiting for something far better than that. And so, the last enemy that will be destroyed is death. But if you just stop and think for a minute, if death is destroyed, what happens? That means everybody's alive. Those that were dead are no longer dead, and they will be alive. And then the question that everybody asks at that point, and I'm always amazed, the Bible anticipates our question so many times. But, for example, Pearl Harbor was a horrible thing. And one of the most horrible things about Pearl Harbor were all of the bodies that fell into the water and were eaten by the sharks. And I actually had a person ask me one time in a Bible class, if they were eaten by the sharks, how in the world can their body be raised? Because it's been chewed up into little bitty parts, and then it was digested by the shark, and now it's scattered on the bottom of the ocean somewhere. And I just laughed, and I said, why do you think that's any harder than a body that is returned to dust? And once you think about it, and you put God back in the picture, it's like Paul said, why would you think it difficult for the dead to be raised up if God is there? And I simply answered that, God's going to do it. Well, what's it going to be like? And everybody wants to know that. I had one friend that said, we're all going to be 5'9" and 160 pounds and 42 years old. And I asked him later, I said, how did you figure that out? And I kid you not, he took me on an excursion through the Bible. But it didn't prove it. We have no earthly idea what it's going to be like. In fact, what Paul says, start reading in verse 35. But someone will ask, how are the dead raised and with what kind of body do they come? You foolish person. What you sow does not come to life unless it dies. And what you sow is not the body that is to be, but is a bare kernel, perhaps of wheat or some other grain. But God gives it, when it's raised, God gives it a body as He has chosen. And to each kind of seed, its own body. What His point is this, we don't know. It's going to be that which God prepares, and it's going to be that which God gives, and it's going to be different from that which we have now. How different? I have no earthly idea because Paul did not tell us. But what he then goes on to say is that some differences are going to be here. The body that you have now is perishable. Right before we come, we watched a History Channel on the death of King Tut. And I know that old boy died thousands of years ago, but you know what? They were still trying to figure out, why did he die? And they finally decided that he had a genetic disorder of the bones, and he broke his leg, and he got the worst kind of malaria that you can ever have, and so he died. And I don't know whether any of that's right or not, but the problem is that whether you're King Tut or King DeLong, you die. And the body wears out, and the body perishes. My brother was a professional soccer player. And I still remember one day he called me up, and he said, well, I retired. I'm going to retire. You're 31 years old. You can't retire. And he says, you can in soccer. And he said, I was training today and I realized I lost a half a step. He was just one half step slower than he was the year before. And of course, in soccer, one half step, you might as well be sitting on the bench. And what he realized was he was an old man in soccer days. And he retired. And that happens to every single one of us. And we finally get to the age where if it doesn't hurt, it doesn't work anymore. And the body just wears out. Y'all aware of that, aren't you? And what's going to happen is, in the resurrection, the body is not perishable. The body in this life is one of dishonor. I hate to tell you all that. But I'm looking at you. And when we see each other, what we realize is, we're oftentimes not much to look at. And even if you're something really gorgeous at 23, hang on. Because it will go away. And the problem is in heaven, we will not be dishonored, but the body will be one of glory. We are now a body of weakness. Paul said it will be a body that will be of power. It is now a body made up of natural elements, the physical side. And there it will be a spiritual body, and we just do not know what that is. We don't know whether that means immaterial, non-physical. We just don't know. But what we know is this. It's different than what it is now. And in that difference, it's going to be a body that is fit for heaven. So go down to verse 45. And he says, thus it is written, the first man, Adam, became a living being. The last Adam, that is Jesus, became a life-giving spirit. It is not the spiritual that is first, but the natural, and then the spiritual. The first man was from the earth, a man of dust. The second man is from heaven. As was the man of dust, so also are we, those who are of the dust. And as is the man of heaven, so also are those who are of heaven. And I like John's comment on this in 1 John. He said, brethren, we are children of God, but it does not appear what we're going to be. But what we know is this, when He appears, we will be like Him. And what happened with Jesus was, He died, and He was buried, and He was raised, and then He ascended to heaven and entered into His glory. And what will happen to us is we will be raised, and we will enter into heaven with a glorious body fit for eternity and fit for God. How does that work? I don't know. Wait and see. What will we look like? You'll all look like me. We don't know. Well, what happens if I don't die? Do I then have to live in this crummy body for the rest of eternity? And Paul says, I tell you a secret. We shall not all die, but we shall all be changed. First time I ever saw that verse was in the cry room. And I don't know who decided to put that in the cry room, but it didn't mean that. It meant the body will be changed. And our body that is weak and mortal will become immortal and glorious and powerful. And we will then be fit for whatever God has prepared for us throughout all of eternity. So what we learn from the Bible is, number one, it has happened. God has raised the dead before. And number two, God promised that it will happen to us someday. And for those that are alive, it will be a changing. But for us that are Christians, it will be glorious. But you realize not everybody's a Christian. And the Bible does deal with that. The evil people will also be raised. But it will be a resurrection unto condemnation and damnation. They will have a body, but it will be fit for eternity away from God. It will be a resurrection of damnation. So, as we go through life together, one by one, we're going to die. And that really is okay. And when we die, I think I told you this, but it still bears repeating. When I first started preaching, Brother Leon Goff's daddy was one of the elders where I preached, and I love that man. He was one of the most godly men I've ever been around. And in his latter years, he got cancer that attacked the bone. And laying in the hospital bed, if he rolled over, he broke a rib. But since he already had four broken ones, adding the fifth one didn't add any more pain. He was just in misery. And if they tried to pick him up, if they tried to move him, it would break something else. And he was simply laying there, and it hurt. And there was nothing they could do. They could not heal him. They could not make it go away. They could not make him feel better. And I walked out of the room, and that was the first time in my life I said, God, please take him quickly. Don't leave him laying there. But believing in a resurrection and a life after death, that's okay. As Paul said in Philippians, to depart and be with Christ is very far better. We believe in the resurrection. So having said all of that, I'm going to tell you, there's just one point to my lesson besides the resurrection. Make sure you're living in such a way that it's a resurrection of life. If you miss heaven, you've missed everything God has prepared for us. But this life has so much to offer, and then you die. The next life offers everything forever, the way it's intended to be. People think being a Christian is so hard. And I won't deny, for some people, it was a mess. And if you just go back, now Lazarus was not a Christian. I'm going to make this statement. Lazarus died before there were any Christians. Lazarus died under the old covenant. There was not a new covenant. Jesus had not been raised from the dead. There were no Christians. But Lazarus died a godly man, and he went to a place of comfort. And the rich man had all of the riches and all of the comfort and all of nothing when he died. And I think about that story over and over and over and over again. Because if you ever met those two people, you would side with the rich man. I almost guarantee it. If you lived in that town and you knew Lazarus, and you knew the rich man, you would make friends of the rich man. And you would go around the block the other way just to avoid contact with Lazarus. But when they died, Lazarus was in a good place. If you die and you're not right with God, it's bad. And it's bad forever. One last scripture, and y'all memorize this, and y'all probably wonder, why in the world didn't he quote that? Hebrews 9, verse 27. It is appointed that man shall die once, and then the resurrection. But the resurrection can be either of life or of death, and you have to make that choice. Now, as you begin making that choice, you have to decide how you're going to live. And if you're ready to obey the gospel tonight, prepare for eternity. We're going to invite you to come as together we stand and as we sing.